Welcome to the Beyond the Pearls podcast, based on the Morning Report series from Elsevier. This podcast has been adapted for audio in collaboration with series editor Dr. Raj Dasgupta, as well as the volume editor for each book. Each episode features an in-depth case dissection format and aims to deliver practical, concise, and easy-to-digest information. And now, here's today's episode.
So let's do a vignette. We have a 42-year-old woman is evaluated in the ED for right upper quadrant pain that has worsened over the preceding 2 days. She has otherwise been well and takes no meds. On exam, she is febrile at 102.2. All other vitals are within normal limits. Abdominal exam reveals right upper quadrant tenderness and gardening. Labs show normal hemoglobin level, elevated WBCs, a normal liver panel and lipase level. And an ultrasound, you know what, demonstrates gallbladder wall thickening, a sonographic Murphy sign is present, and that there is no common bile duct dilatation. Which of the following is the most appropriate treatment? So this is going to definitely someone who has what? Cholecystitis. Well, how do we know that? Well, of course, I think that we all memorize this mnemonic out there. You know, gallstones usually happen in women, so females. F for 40. So there's these classic mnemonics that we think about, you know, in these individuals. And we're not going to talk about BMI, okay? I just wanted to start talking about some of the characteristics. So we know this is going to be classic findings of cholecystectomy, which is going to be the most appropriate. A, is it cholecystectomy before hospital discharge? Is it cholecystectomy in about maybe 4 weeks later? Does this patient need to get urgently taken for a cholecystectomy right now? Choice C. D, let's do an ERCP. Or E, let's do a percutaneous gallbladder drain. You know, and I think when we look at this, you know, there's no indication that you need to do a perc drain of the gallbladder. This gallbladder can be taken out safely. It's not indicated to do it this time. So I wouldn't do a percutaneous drain, only in individuals where you unstable or contraindications for doing a surgery. ERCP, you know, they were talking about there's going to be probably a stone in the common bile duct. If there were abnormalities to indicate that, where it would be alkaline phosphatase, maybe, but nothing here says there's going to be a common bile duct stone or a stone that needs to be evaluated through ERCP. You know, the answer is not rushing these patients off to the OR at that exact moment, especially if they're going to be septic, especially if they haven't got antibiotics being initiated yet. So it really comes down to doing a cholecystectomy. Should it be during this hospital stay or, you know, afterwards? And the answer is not even a question. This is going to be done, hopefully, before hospital discharge. So acute cholecystitis can be diagnosed with ultrasound like it did here. Don't forget the positive Murphy sign. Treatment of acute cholecystitis is always going to be analgesia. These patients are going to be in pain, IV antibiotics. You definitely want to cover gram negatives and anaerobes, and you definitely want to think about a cholecystectomy before hospital discharge. So for acute cholecystitis, a couple things you should know for the board exams. I mentioned it's due to an obstruction in the cystic duct. The gallbladder results in being inflamed, and of course we worry about them being infected. Of course we think about polymicrobial infections, really focusing on gram negatives and focusing on anaerobes. So lab studies definitely could show leukocytosis. You know, liver chemistries, whether it could be the transaminases, tend to be normal. You know, definitely the functional labs of the liver tend to be normal, whether it be bilirubin or albumin or PTT INR. Unless there's a complication with a common bile duct obstruction. We did mention about the alkaline phosphatase. So acute cholecystitis could always be suggested by the ultrasound, you know, showing the gallbladder wall thickening. And one thing I do want to mention, everyone, is the HIDA scan. Everyone always talks about it. So it's the lack of gallbladder filling on the hepatobiliary acid scan. A HIDA also supports the diagnosis. So when we talk about this, I'm going to put a picture up here of a normal HIDA scan where you see filling of the entire biliary tree. You have the gallbladder over here. You're going to have the common bile duct over here. And you're going to have the intrahepatic biliary ducts over here. And you get good filling. So this is a normal HIDA scan. If you did not get filling, then that HIDA scan without filling will be indicative in the right clinical setting of someone who may have, you know, cholecystitis. So how do we treat it? Of course, right off the bat, we said, you know, IV fluids, antibiotics, watching for sepsis, and of course, cholecystectomy. Most patients should undergo this during the hospitalization. Emergent, remember, one of the choices was, do you do emergent, you know, surgery? And really, when you do that on the boards or clinically, when you see the words emphysematous gallbladder, and I put some pictures up there, if it's going to be an emphysematous gallbladder or gallbladder perforation, you definitely want to think about that. Look at this gallbladder with all this air surrounding it. Now, in patients who are not surgical candidates and do not respond to antibiotics, you know, doing percutaneous cholecystectomy or percutaneous cholecystostomy tubes, or even thinking about an endoscopic drainage can be pursued. So, of course, remember what separates when you have infections in the abdominal cavity or urinary cavity versus the lung, it's always source control. So when you have an infection in the abdomen or somewhere in the urinary tract, you not only want to give the right antibiotics, you need to drain it if necessary. So that's why we would do things like doing the percutaneous cholecystostomy tubes if necessary, or even an endoscopic drainage if necessary. And of course, these are going to be things we think about if you're not taking the patient to surgery. So acalculus cholecystitis, why did I want to put this on the board? Because they love asking it. And when we think about this, when do I see it? It typically occurs in critically ill patients. You know, and who are those? Patients in the ICU, people with sepsis, you know, and this can result from gallbladder ischemia. So when do we suspect it? Unfortunately, in sedated, mechanically ventilated patients, they can't explain what's going on. There's a fever, we're looking for a source. These patients are usually gonna be on multiple pressors and fighting a current infection. And what do we see? There's a leukocytosis, there's fevers, there's sometimes even jaundice. So, you know, we're looking for this diagnosis. And it's the diagnosis is made with an ultrasound showing gallbladder wall thickening, some pericholecystic fluid, you get some gallbladder distension or gallbladder wall pneumatosis, but there's no stones. There's no stones, hence the word acalculus cholecystitis. Now, how do we treat that? Well, we want to give IV antibiotics covering the same bugs, gram negatives, anaerobes, no polymicrobial. And we definitely want to see if this patient is a candidate for cholecystectomy. If they're not, and many times they're not because they're in the medical ICU, they're unstable, then percutaneous cholecystostomy tubes may be needed for unstable patients, you know what I mean? Or people who are just poor surgical candidates to begin with. And I did mention once again, if you're not doing a percutaneous cholecystostomy tube, you could think about an endoscopic gallbladder drainage also. But look at this, look at that last fourth bullet point. The mortality rate for untreated acalculus cholecystitis can be as high as 75%, which is why it's important to make the right diagnosis and treat. So, you know, this one is always one that no one wants to be diagnosed with. It's called functional gallbladder disorder. And anytime you start telling the patient it's functional, there could be some awkward moments there. So when you think about this, it should be considered in patients with biliary pain without gallstones or any type of structural pathology. So one way you could support this diagnosis is doing something called a gallbladder ejection fraction. And even though you could do that, and if the gallbladder ejection fraction is less than 40% when measured by CCK stimulated cholecystography, I'm not even joking, this is true, it supports the diagnosis. But it's important to say that even if you have a positive finding, which is that gallbladder ejection fraction less than 40%, it doesn't predict that the patient will respond by taking out the gallbladder. So if you give this diagnosis, it's important to give some reassurance, maybe antispasmodic agents may be beneficial. But in clinical practice, patients who do undergo cholecystectomy, you know, might continue just to have symptoms even regardless. So let's do another question together. We have a 39-year-old man who's evaluated in the ED for right upper quadrant pain, fever, and malaise for 3 days duration. Until now, he had been well. On exam, he is febrile 102, his blood pressure is 100 over 40, heart rate of 94. Jaundice is present. An abdominal exam reveals right upper quadrant tenderness and guarding. Labs have a normal hemoglobin, an elevated WBC count, total serum bilirubin of 9, in a normal lipase level. Right upper quadrant ultrasound demonstrates a gallbladder with stones and no gallbladder wall thickening or pericolic fluid. The common bile duct is somewhat dilated and a stone is visualized in the distal common bile duct. Antibiotic therapy with Pepicillin Tazobactam is initiated. Which of the following is the most appropriate next step in management? So when I see this, this is going to be someone that comes in who has signs of a cholangitis. There's going to be some jaundice and fevers and right upper quadrant pain. Should we do a laparoscopic procedure here? Probably a little too aggressive. Do we need to do an MRCP? Well, we saw that there is already a common bile duct stone in the distal common bile duct, and it's dilated. And you have findings of, what do they call this? That Charcot's triad. So, you know, I don't think we need to do an MRCP at this time. I think we need to actually open up that common bile duct. There's no need to do a cholecystectomy. That's the wrong diagnosis. The answer has to be what? Urgent ERCP, endoscopic retrograde cholangiopantechogram. So D, so this is exactly what we talked about over here. So let's talk about common bile duct stones and cholangitis. Common bile duct stones are a leading cause of obstructive jaundice and pancreatitis. So I put a couple of statistics here. 20% of common duct stones pass spontaneously, and less than 50% of patients develop symptoms. Common duct stones may be visualized by, you know, a transabdominal ultrasound. You can see it here. And this picture here is, an ERCP, just for everyone who's wondering. And, you know, patients who are suspected of having a common duct stone but have intermediate findings on ultrasound, those are the patients where an MRCP should be performed. Why? To avoid the risks of performing the ERCP procedure. So common duct stones should be removed urgently with ERCP in patients with cholangitis. You know, in patients who are not surgical candidates, you know, endoscopic sphincterotomy can be facilitated. Passage of additional common bile stone to facilitate the passage of additional common bile duct stones. And of course, I couldn't resist by putting in Charcot's triad. Once again, that's fever, right upper quadrant pain, and jaundice. And someone's already yelling out Reynolds pentad. And what's Reynolds pentad? Which is Charcot's triad plus altered mental status and low blood pressure. So what am I going to do here? We have a 67-year-old man is evaluated for a 9-month history of vague periodic epigastric pain. He reports no other symptoms. A trial of esmoprazole, which is a PPI therapy, has not relieved symptoms. Vital signs and physical exam are unremarkable. An abdominal ultrasound reveals a 1.5 centimeter polyp in the gallbladder with no gallbladder wall thickening, no fluid, no stones or sludge, no common bile duct stone or bile duct dilatation is seen. Findings on the upper endoscopy with gastric biopsy are normal. Which of the following is the most appropriate management? So what do we do with this 1.5 centimeter polyp in the gallbladder? Well, is that enough to say, let's take out the gallbladder? A, B, should we do an ERCP? That doesn't seem right with nothing going on in the patient and the description of the common bile duct being very benign. Should we do a HIDA scan? This doesn't really sound like acalculous cholecystitis. Should we just say repeat the ultrasound in 6 months? That's kind of tempting right there. But you know what this really comes down to? Guidelines. And do you know what the rules are for your boards when it comes down to taking out the gallbladder based upon the size of the polyp? Now, I gotta tell you, I believe the cutoff is gonna be 1 centimeter. This is 1.5 centimeter. Individuals have a polyp greater than 1 centimeter really puts them at a high risk for cancer. So I'm gonna go with A, cholecystectomy. Let's see. All right. And that is the cutoff. You know, a gallbladder polyp greater than 1 centimeter, high risk for malignancy. What's the next best step? What should you offer the patient? Taking out that gallbladder. And of course, gallbladder polyps associated with gallbladder stones or primary sclerosing cholangitis are more likely to be neoplastic regardless of what the polyp size is. So kind of a busy slide, so I want to show a bunch of different things here. So no one should be surprised by these statements. Gallbladder polyps are usually incidentally found, and Neoplastic adenomas represent less than 0.5% of polyps. And the best predictor of malignant lesion is size, with polyps 1 centimeter or greater more likely to be neoplastic. And I put a picture here to show all the different things that could be in your gallbladder. Polyps, metastasis, carcinoma. You could have sludge. You could have stones. So it's very important that, you know, you read the results of the ultrasound when you get it. And what is this diagram here on the right, just to help guide you on your boards of what to do next when you find a polyp? You know, so when you have a gallbladder polyp of any size, you know, associated with gallstones, biliary colic, you know, associated with primary sclerosing cholangitis, then yes, the answer is cholecystectomy. Take it out. If the answer is no, then you look at size. And if the polyp's less than 5 millimeters, you can repeat the ultrasound in about 1 year to see if it's increasing in size. If it's greater than 5 millimeters, then you go down here. And if it's a polyp 6 to 9 millimeters, well, you can repeat the ultrasound in 6 months. And then, of course, if it's greater than 1 centimeter, what do we say? You go straight to cholecystectomy. So gallbladder cancer, I think we need to talk about this, is rare, you know, and the gallbladder is a reservoir for Salmonella typhi. So of course, on your boards, during the infectious disease section, they're gonna talk about Salmonella and they're gonna divide it into the typhoid and non-typhoid species. And people with Salmonella typhi are chronically infected, and these patients are high risk for gallbladder cancer because it's a reservoir where Salmonella typhi likes to lay dormant in there. You know, gallbladder cancer can present with biliary colic in early stages, right upper quadrant pain, nausea, vomiting, weight loss. And of course, these symptoms such as the weight loss and jaundice definitely occur in advanced cancer. And, you know, the truth is early gallbladder cancer is most commonly diagnosed incidentally, you know, and sometimes you find it after you do a cholecystectomy is performed for biliary colic. You're like, oh my God, what does the, you know, pathology show? There's cancer there. So the treatment of choice for gallbladder cancer, of course, is definitely going to be surgery. Now, I had to put this here because I remember when I was studying for boards, you know, there was always something called a clat skin tumor. I don't know if anyone remembers that. You know, that's always going to be when they can just throw you that curveball on the board exams. So a clat skin tumor is a type of cholangiocarcinoma that begins in the area of the hilum where the left and right bile ducts join and leave the liver. It was named after, you know, Gerald Klatskin, who in 1965 described almost 15 cases. So when you're looking at this, the hilum is going to be right around here, and it's going to be the area where the left and right bile ducts, so you got the left bile duct over here and the right bile duct over here, they join and leave the liver. So you can see this, what they call clat skin tumor. So it is a cholangiocarcinoma. Cholangiocarcinomas for the boards have 3 main types: intrahepatic type, they have a perihilar type, and there's a distal bile duct. That's going to be distal to the cystic duct. So what are the risk factors for getting cholangiocarcinoma? Well, having primary sclerosing cholangitis, of course, having cholecystectomy cysts, having the metabolic syndrome in general puts you at a high risk. Diet, talking about diabetes, elevated BMI, hyperlipidemia, hypertension. You know, and symptoms of cholangiocarcinoma could include jaundice, right upper quadrant pain, and constitutional symptoms. So when we talk about, you know, working these patients up and making the diagnosis for cholangiocarcinoma, it really depends. If you have the intrahepatic type, usually you could get imaging like CTs or MRIs. You typically need a biopsy for confirmation. They can be associated with the elevated tumor marker 19.9, but this is supportive of the diagnosis, but it's not 100%. And of course, first line therapy is going to be resection. If you have the perihilar cholangiocarcinoma, really difficult to diagnose, you know. But if you do an ERCP, you could do some bile duct brushings and look for cytology. Important thing is for the perihilar cholangiocarcinoma, if you do a percutaneous or transluminal biopsy, you know, they may exclude you from liver transplant because of the risk of tumor seeding. So I wouldn't know that. And the distal, very similar. For diagnosis such as the perihilar, and the preferred treatment for the distal is a pancreoduodenectomy. So taking out the pancreas and some of the duodenum in these cases.
Thank you for listening to the Beyond the Pearls podcast from Inside the Boards. This podcast is executive produced by Christopher Brightigan and Dr. Patrick Beeman. This podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not medical advice. Ars longa, vita brevis.